Mace Finnegan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 of the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan here with you. As we inch closer to the weekend. So we are going to end our program today and for the week by doing a little NFL rewatch. Now, some of you may be familiar with the Ringer podcast, The Rewatchables.
Love it.
Where Bill Simmons and his cast of characters,
yeah,
they go back and watch old movies and react to them. And Willie had the idea of doing a similar project with an NFL game. And as you've learned over the course of the week, Willie does this on his own time all the time.
And there's no podcast.
And there's
it's
no
a podcast exactly. Of one. I talk to myself about it.
I'm sure your kids are like, what's going on? What's dad doing downstairs? Why is he talking to himself about this game from 1986? Is dad okay? But now we're going to give Willie an outlet to do it without talking to himself. He's going to talk to us and all of you. So Willie has selected a game from 1986. Week 3, Miami Dolphins and New York Jets. We tweeted out the link yesterday, David James, if you would be so kind as to tweet out the link again. So if you missed it, you can watch it right now if you'd like and listen to us and react in real time. But since this was Willie's idea, I would like to hand it over to Willie to explain what we're going to do and what some of the things he was looking for as he did this exercise.
First, if you're enough of a nut or a junkie to have actually watched the whole broadcast, like I invited you to do.
Congratulations.
I commend you for your nerdness, your sports junkiness.
It was more than 3 hours long.
The disease we all love having as sports fans, you would actually take the time to do it. If you skimmed it or if you didn't, what I thought would be fun is just watch part of a game and just see what jumps out at you. What looks completely different? What looks the same? And what are some of the fun little things that you see with the fashion of the time, the pop culture of the time? So I said 40 years. We're rounding up. It's 1986, which isn't quite 40. But I picked this game because it was, if you did take the time to watch it, hopefully it entertained you. It was 51-45. I remember watching it as a teenager. It was the number one game of the week. It was a noon game.
I wasn't alive yet.
No. You were not alive yet. But it was Dan Marino in his prime against the Jets, a division rival. The Jets, both teams were playoff teams. Both teams made the playoffs the year before and the year. It's early in the season. It was a great crowd at Giant Stadium. Beautiful day. Dan Marino threw 6 touchdown passes and lost. The Jets had a lead. Lost the lead, came back, scored a touchdown on the last play of the game to tie it, and then threw a touchdown pass on the first series of overtime to win it. So it was a thrilling game. Dick Enberg and Merlin Olsen were on the call. They were NBC's number one team at the time. So I kind of just said different categories. What do you see in the broadcast? What do you see on the field that jumps out? I asked D-Mace in particular to look at if anything jumps out at him scheme-wise. So I just want to sort of go around the room and maybe say what would be the one, and if people did this or if people just hearken back to participate in the discussion, you can text us or call. What do you think when you see highlights of a game from that era, what is the number one thing that you think of? And maybe we'll spark some discussion with our thoughts. So Adam, you being not having been born at the time.
Still 3 years away.
What was the most stark thing that jumped out at you when you watched the game?
So I was watching this from more of a broadcast perspective.
Yes.
I was looking at how the game was presented on television. And there was something that I saw that I pounced on. The 10-minute ticker. The 10-minute ticker. And I have found a story about how the 10-minute ticker changed the way we watch sports. So back then, there was not a constant scroll at the bottom of your screen with up-to-the-second updates on every other game going on. NBC, theoretically, was going to show updates from other games every 10 minutes, Michael Wiseman, the producer at NBC who invented it, he called it the 10-minute ticker. Why? He liked the alliteration. That's what he said, the 10-minute ticker. And it was just overlaid on top of the action. So it wasn't a highlight package. It was just, here are the scores. And I don't think there were even times on the scores. It was just like Buffalo 0, Indianapolis 0, first. Like first quarter.
Right.
That's all it was. As Michael Wiseman explained to Yahoo Sports, we didn't compress the screen back then. Now the score is along the bottom. So we would just put the score over the picture you were seeing. I would call the producer of a particular game and say, put the other game up. He'd say, I can't. It's going to block the action and the ball is on the 10. So sometimes the updates were not done every 10 minutes. I have found a review from Bill Marks of the Orlando Sentinel.
Ah.
Here was his review.
I was living in Orlando. This was my newspaper at the time.
Here was his review of the 10-minute ticker. Quote, after 2 weeks of timing NBC's 10-minute ticker, I've decided that no one at NBC can tell time. I'd hate to be serving detention in elementary school with my afternoon sentence based on NBC's idea of 10 minutes. During Sunday's Dolphins-Bills game, NBC gave scoring updates at 117, 147, 159. 12 minutes, not bad. 242, 257, and 320.
Not exactly 10 minutes.
Not exactly 10 minutes.
And it's hard to get all that in.
But just thinking back, the other thing too, and Dylan and Antioch mentioned this on our text line as well, there being no constant score bug at the bottom of the screen is so odd. They might have a little clock, but the score was not always on the screen. Nowadays, people don't just freak out about if there's a score bug on the screen or not. People freak out about the design of the score bug. Because usually during the Super Bowl, whichever network is broadcasting it may unveil a new score bug. And I even remember during this past Super Bowl, people were like, oh no, the score bug, it's so ugly. And now there was a time where there wasn't a score bug.
Yeah, it was not on there at all. And so they only flashed the score periodically or when the score changed. Even the clock and the down and distance was not constantly up there. That didn't come along until the early 90s. I think Fox, when they finally got rights.
I think it's called the Fox Box.
The Fox Box.
The Fox Box.
Yeah.
By the way, one texter said, not to toot my own horn or anything. He goes, all this time I thought Adam was older. No, texter. Nope. I am the ripe age of 36.
So the 10-minute ticker, it was the early days where fantasy football was just starting to get traction. I played and my buddies played. So we would be watching, but then you were thinking, when the score changed on the 10-minute ticker, they never told you, unless they went back to the studio, which they still do today, who scored for the other team. You're like, oh, there's a touchdown being scored by Denver. Is that I have John Elway. Is that a touchdown pass? You would not know. Now, we are so used to every single time a score changes, you know who scored it, how many yards it was, because it's constantly being scrolled.
Oftentimes,
in real
before
time.
if you're oftentimes you'll learn before you see it on TV.
Right.
How many times are you monitoring your fantasy lineup? You're watching the game. Let's say it's a Titans game, and you'll see on your phone Calvin Ridley touchdown before Calvin Ridley actually catches the touchdown.
Back then, there was no internet, so to do our fantasy, sometimes you had to wait until the paper came out on Monday, and really Tuesday because you had a Monday night game, to really tabulate your whole score. It was all manually done. All right, so D-Mace,
so that's what stood out to me.
Okay, so
the 10-minute ticker.
What was your number one, D-Mace?
Oh, man, I guess for me it was just sort of the structure of the game and the movement of the game. I forgot that when you kicked it out of bounds, you got to re-kick it. It wasn't a penalty.
The opening kickoff, exactly. Pat Leahy kicks it out of bounds. And it was one of those things where you couldn't get the ball to stay on the tee, and then he kicks it out. You just moved it 5 yards back and kicked it again.
Exactly. And then, looking at the sidelines are not littered with inconsequential, like, people that shouldn't be there. Like,
right.
You shouldn't be there. Why are you here?
There are no get-back coaches.
Exactly. Right? Even if there's no other people, celebrities, all these other people that are scouring the sidelines. The sidelines look as if you can move around freely. You look at games now, there's so many people on the sideline, so many celebrities and cameras and everything else that the sideline just seems so packed. When you watch games now, I mean, there's really people that are associated with the teams, and there's not many broadcasting, you know, because broadcasting back then isn't what it is now. So you don't see four or five trucks, you know, outside the building. You don't see those big cranes inside the building here, you know, video, recording the game and giving you other advantages. So to me, that's what I initially saw first. But then obviously, once you get into the game, you start to see some of the things schematically that have changed. And some things they are calling, some things they are not calling. But as far as player-wise, I told Willie this, I think it was yesterday. I said, man, these guys, it didn't seem like they had the athleticism that the guys have now.
And they were just smaller players.
Yeah, they were just smaller players. In the game, even though some of those guys were running fast, they didn't look like it. It didn't look like a fast game going on. Now, the Miami Dolphins were ahead of a lot of teams as far as the offensive output, but it just still seemed like a slower game for me.
Speaking of the sideline, I thought it was very noteworthy. Don Shula, one of the greatest coaches of all time, and Joe Walton, who was, you know, not one of the greatest coaches of all time, but he, you know, he had his day. Both are the coaches on the sideline, head coaches. Neither of them is wearing a headset. There is no communication by either head coach on a headset of any kind. Imagine that today. And not only that, they both called the plays.
Yeah. There was no offensive coordinator, at least not for Miami. There wasn't a guy that was labeled the offensive coordinator.
Yeah. So Don Shula is sending the guy in with the play.
Yeah.
Joe Walton is sending a guy, so you had to sub on every play. But that's how they did it back then.
No tablets, no Microsoft Surface tablets.
Right.
Our friend Gover says, my biggest reaction when I see old games or clips is how those guys basically played on cement.
Yeah, we were talking about that too. Yeah,
there's no question about it. That was high on my list, was the rug.
Yeah.
And sure enough, in this game, and I didn't do it for this reason, but I did it because it was just a great game. But Hugh Greene, a famous player, a great college player, a Heisman Trophy candidate as a defensive player, he messed up his knee really bad on the turf. And you look at the highlights of other games, just the old-style AstroTurf.
Yeah, it was
brutal.
Awful.
Just brutal. How did they ever – like to me, that's the throwback time machine going, who ever thought that was a good idea?
How about NFL Update 86? What, NFL
86? NFL 86. Let's go to Bob Costas in the studio. Bob Costas was the
NFL
guy.
NFL 86.
Ahmad Rashad was in there.
Uh-huh.
And Paul McGuire. And they would have the clips from the other games. There were some interesting special teams plays that were thrown in there. There was one play where they, instead of Buddy Ryan was the coach of the Eagles, and he ran a play where he had his punter fake like he was going to punt it and then just fire the ball as a pass. And he got the pass interference call, and they kept the ball.
The other thing that stands out to me, the sleeves. The player sleeves are so long. Like they look like when you're a kid and you wear a football jersey where the sleeves are baggy and they go past your elbows.
A lot of stripes visible.
Yes. Not a lot of extra stuff. You see a lot of athletes today wearing different types of, you know, wristbands and arm sleeves and calf sleeves and jewelry. Very bare bones, these football players. But I was like, the sleeves are so long. Like,
the sleeves were long. The stripes, D-Mace, used to be something you had pride. Like, you wanted the stripes to sort of flap. Now you don't want anybody being able to grab anything.
No.
Right?
The jerseys were much looser.
Much looser.
Then. Now they want them basically skin tight so you can't grab hold to jersey. You know, so you can get that disadvantage, especially defensive, defensive guys. They have their shirts. If they could have shirts painted on, they would.
This was another one about the jerseys themselves. The Dolphins had what we used to call in Florida, because I remember the last year I played, they had like the net mesh.
Yeah.
You can see through the jersey. You could actually see the structure of the shoulder pads through the jersey. just to keep it, I guess, a little bit cooler.
Yeah, because it's so hot down there.
Yeah, because Miami, they had it like that. So that was a style that I don't think has ever come back. But I remember it's literally like a net.
Yeah, you can see it. You can see through it, rather.
All right, let's see if David, another youngster,
Let's get to David before we get to break.
I think 10 years before, right. I was like negative 10.
Whenever you were negative 10.
Negative 10. One of the things I noticed was, I think it was after Dan Marino threw his first touchdown, it was like 41 straight games or 41 of 43 games of having one touchdown pass. I think that's, to me, like, I thought that was crazy to see that, like, that was a big milestone for him. Just because, like, so
quote
many.
Unquote. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Quote unquote milestone. Because, like, so many guys throw one touchdown a game nowadays. Right. That was one of the first things I saw.
That's a good one. And there were two graphics that jumped out at me with Marino because it was in his third year, maybe fourth year. And he took the league by storm, right? He was taking it to another level. He had six touchdown passes. He had over 400 yards passing. It was his sixth 400-yard passing game. And that already in his fourth year, the beginning of his fourth year, was second all time.
Oh, wow.
Now, and I think Dan Fouts had the lead with eight or something like that at that point in 1986. I would venture to say that the number of 400-yard passing games has, you know, grown exponentially in the last 40 years, for sure. And how about this? Passer rating, we sometimes talk about passer rating. It was a thing back then. Dan Marino and Joe Montana had become the highest passer rating guys of all time. Marino at 96.4, Montana 92.4, and the guy who was third all time, Roger Staubach, 83.4. Now, if you're 83.4, you're like, this guy can't be a starter.
A bum.
This guy's a bum. He can't do it. So, like, the standard for passer rating and interceptions and efficiency, it's way, way higher.
615-737-1025. What stood out to you if you watched this game between the Dolphins and Jets from week 3 of 1986, or if you just have memories of the presentation of football, the game of football from 40 years ago? What's been the biggest change over the past four decades? 615-737-1025. We will continue this coming up next. Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game.
Reves to kick it off. 15-minute sudden death. Safety field goal, touchdown, it's over. But only 15 minutes. It comes to Michael Harper. Ooh, and he's cracked hard. Fumbles, and who's got it? Miami, if they rule out a fumble. Was he down?
We haven't seen a signal from the officials.
If it's a fumble, it'll be the fourth. No, they're motioning Jets ball. Marino thought it was his, and very nearly was.
Go back and take a quick peek at it. Traffic right there, the shot to the ball. Woody Bennett.
Oh, that was a fumble. That was a fumble, and unless the Jets get it off, they're going to vibrate.
Let's see what we can see with this one. Legs going down.
Matter now. They get a playoff.
D. Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, the game, doing our version of the rewatchables here with an NFL game Willie picked out from 1986, Dolphins versus Jets. Okay, I do have another observation. The fashion.
That's awesome.
In 1986. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at a lot of big hair. A lot of big hair, men and women. I'm looking at a lot of big hair. The other thing I notice, they're all looking at the field because they're not.
Yes.
They don't have their heads buried in their cell phones. I'm looking. I paused on a shot of the crowd. They are all looking at either each other or towards the field. Not one person looking down at the cell phone because they didn't have cell phones. So fans were more engaged and they had an interesting fashion taste back then.
And it was, I think, a better crowd for that reason. Also, by the way, I have a few entries in the fashion. By the way, even if you didn't watch this particular game, if you have a fun thought that you want to text in or call in about, just what was so different when you think about when you watched a game or what you saw at a game that you would just never see today, in any sporting event, but football is what we're focusing on today. Just text us, 615-737-1025.
One texter says, players today are jacked, not so in 1986.
There's no doubt about it.
You're right about that.
There's no doubt about it. Now, Mark Gastineau, he was kind of jacked. He also had an extreme mullet.
Yes.
I mean, extreme. Dan Marino had a nice little mullet going.
A lot of mullets in the crowd.
A lot of mullets in the crowd.
A lot of Jerry Seinfeld hair, early Jerry Seinfeld hair.
No question. And the trucker hat to go with it, the big foam front with the mesh back. That was a huge style in the crowd with that. And the coaching staff.
Coaches wore the same thing.
No doubt about
it. What I saw, too, was a lot of tape on players' wrists. No gloves. Even wide receivers, no gloves, but a bunch of tape. I'm sure they had to stick them on there, Willie. Young folks don't know about stick them. But they didn't have gloves on, but they had tape wrapped up to their elbows and around their hands. So.
One texter said.
Occasional neck guard.
Yes, neck guards.
Sonny says, have you mentioned the fact the quarterback did the back pedal dropbacks and how much that part is changed?
Nobody would ever do that.
But Dan Marino was known for that. Yeah. That was his dropback.
Dan Fouts was famous for the back pedal drop.
Yeah, you can't do that now.
Now, what we heard David play there was the opening kickoff of overtime. It's 45-45. The Jets tied the game on the last play of regulation. They win the toss. They get the kickoff. They fumbled it. I mean, there's no question about it. It's a fumble. But it was the primitive days of replay. I think, if I've got this right, it was the first year that they actually had any kind of replay system. And they missed the call. The problem was that they didn't buzz down in time to the referee. So there was there was no challenge system back then. There was a guy in the replay booth that was supposed to buzz down to the ref and say, we need to look at this again. And the Jets ran up to the ball, and they ran the first play of overtime before. And you could hear Dick Enberg and Merlin Olsen saying, let's get another look at it. Let's get another look at it. And as they were looking, like, oh, man, that should be Dolphins ball. But it was too late. And the Jets took the ball down the field and scored the winning touchdown in overtime. And now T-Base is looking at another blooper from the game where there was a dead play. The play was blown dead, and Dan Marino threw the ball anyway, and the referee made a great catch.
It was a perfect catch. It was a perfect route, a perfect throw. He expected somebody to be there, and the ref was there.
It was great. They showed it on the Jumbotron. Okay, and speaking of fans in the stands, Adam, this is another observation I saw. Fans in the stands. Not only do they not have a phone, and they're actually watching the game, but several had another thing around their neck, binoculars.
Oh.
That used to be a big thing.
Yeah, because you didn't have the big
they didn't
Videotron.
Have the huge. Yeah. Now, really, you don't need to wear binoculars to a game, right?
No.
There's no reason.
Yeah. Either one, you look at your phone or you look up at the huge television that's in front of you.
That would be a way better view than anything you could get on binoculars. But people would bring binoculars. Mm-hmm. Because if you had a Jumbotron, it was smaller, and you would want to focus from the upper deck on something closer. So I thought that's the classic 80s look, the trucker hat with kind of a butterfly collar, not 70s, but a little more polyester.
A lot of Budweiser paraphernalia, yes. I noticed in the crowd as well.
Yes.
Specifically Budweiser.
How about the graphics on the scoreboards
when
it said defense? I like it. Yeah. They should bring it back. I like
old
the
school.
Graphics.
Yeah, with the lights, the light bright lights.
Dylan says, I'd like to know what the price of the tickets were to go see that game.
Great question.
Probably, let's say, lower bowl.
Let's just look it up.
Lower bowl. Lower bowl
the
now?
That would have been the Meadowlands, right?
Meadowlands, yeah.
Yeah, this is in the Meadowlands. I would say $25 for lower bowl tickets.
Oh, man.
Price, 1986, I think the average ticket
$25?
This is Googling.
Yeah, AI is pulling it up.
Yeah, it's still. Oh, I might have stumped the Google. It's taking a while for this to pull
Google.
Up.
So I got one that said in November 2nd, 1986, it was listed online with a price of $20 for a New York Giants game.
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
And I think I lived in Orlando. Mm-hmm. If you drive to the Bucks.
Oh, you can get in free.
You can probably get a pretty pretty much.
They probably pay name your price. Yeah. They pay you to go and name your price.
The Super Bowl in 1986 was $75.
So that got to tell you that lower bowls were like during the season, they had to be about $20-some.
Yeah, and really no luxury boxes at the time. That was not really a thing.
One texter says, I'm old, so I remember Stick'Em when they had to replace the ball after three or four plays because the ball was so messed up. Yeah. Not NFL. I remember attending a Vanderbilt game in the late 70s. I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly. Frank Mordica had his jersey. Frank Mordica had his jersey ripped off his body about seven or eight times in the game. They kept a box of those torn jerseys on the sideline to be thrown away later. Needless to say, they never made it to the trash because back then fans could exit the field.
Wow.
So those jerseys were gone.
Yes.
I wonder if we could look up the average size offensive lineman in 1986. I'll bet you it was under 300 pounds.
I guarantee you it was 265.
You think it was 265?
265.
I'll bet you.
In between 265 and 270.
I'll bet it's even lower than that. I think you're close. Uh-huh. I think you're close. But now... What would it be now? It's well over 300 now.
Yeah, it's got to be
the average.
I looked this up. It was around 6'4 and 272 to 275 pounds.
Oh, wow. That's an offensive line.
Yeah.
In 86.
I do remember.
So you're right on it, D-Mace. Mm-hmm.
I do remember, I guess it would have been during this year's Super Bowl, I think, they were talking about the Eagles' offensive line. Mm-hmm. And they had the average height and weight of the Eagles' offensive line versus, I believe, the Packers' offensive line from the first Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I hope I'm remembering this correctly.
Yeah. They won the first Super Bowl.
I believe the difference in average weight was 100 pounds.
Oh, wow.
On the offensive line.
That's huge, man. Back then it was just relative because the defensive players were not that big either. Here's
another one. And it's another thing that we take for granted now. The yellow line for the first down.
No yellow line.
Still years away from coming in. In fact, it might have been when you were playing, D-Mace, the first iteration of the yellow line.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be one look up. What was the first season?
Ooh.
But it was really old school. You had this terrible turf that was not painted real well, the yard markers. The only way you knew as you're watching the game that the first down was going to, you kind of had to know in your mind if it's third and eight, how far, 8 yards. If they threw it to the sideline, you might see the orange thing that you still put out there with the chain gang. But in the middle of the field, you'd have to just eyeball it and say, did he get the first down?
According to Wikipedia, the first and 10 line was first broadcast by SportVision, a private company, during ESPN's coverage of a Bengals-Ravens game on September 27th, 1998.
Hmm.
Okay, so right?
I was playing. Yeah, that was my first year.
The rise
year.
Of D-Mace is the rise year. Of the yellow line.
Yeah, there we go.
And then they still, back then, two or three times per game, they rarely these days bring out the chain gang to measure the first down. They still do it occasionally. But back then, those guys were a lot more busy, right?
Mm-hmm. Coming out. You have to get the dramatic zoom in of the tip of the football.
Right.
As they're stretching the chain across the field. Yes, just the no-frills approach to the broadcast. Today, we are inundated with so much stuff during a broadcast. High-end graphics and the score bug and replays and all of those things. It's easy to get distracted when watching the game. At this point, it's just the game.
Yeah.
It's just the game.
Yeah. It's pleasant in some ways. It's simpler. For example, Merlin Olsen, who was considered a top-end analyst, mm-hmm. he would be the NBC guy. And, of course, John Madden had become the CBS guy by then, but they did not get the detail of the schemes like some of the guys do today. Mm-hmm. Fair to say?
Yeah, no,
D-Mace?
No.
Like
yeah,
when
no,
they're
right.
showing you a replay, they're not using fancy terminology very much. It's very simple, which I think is a lot easier relatable to the fan watching. And that's the trick sometimes is to not get too technical. Like, remember when John Gruden started doing those games, man, did he ever have a lot of lingo because he was a play caller, right? He goes, this is a smash.
Why?
Why? Like, he would have some serious terminology. A wham block or an out route, a drag, and he had a lot of things, but he had to be careful not to overdo it because then you would lose me.
I think
didn't worry about Merlin Olsen losing me.
Yeah, I think
he was talking about.
He tried to be more so in the John Madden sort of broadcasting of a game. Like that's what I think Gruden was, because he wanted to give you the terminology, and it was almost like a, because Madden played, he coached, and then he goes in the box. Well, Gruden coaches, and Gruden played in college, didn't he? I know his brother played in college.
And I think he played in Arena League.
Yeah. So Jay was a great Arena League quarterback.
Yeah, he was. So when you play coach, I think you try to bring that flair, at least John Madden and Gruden did, that flair to the booth. And I think both of them did it.
I got to give a shout out to the late Dick Enberg, who was one of the greatest of all time. And one big thrill for me as a young broadcaster, when the Titans first came to town, I had a gig as I was sort of, you know, in addition to what we were doing for the radio show before and after the game, during the game, I, if needed, could be a spotter for the broadcast. And sometimes it would be the network broadcast, and I got to do some games that Dick Enberg did. He was sort of later in his career by then. In the mid-80s, he was in his prime. The man, he was awesome. Now, David, do we have the game-tying touchdown or the game-winning touchdown that you can play?
Yes, I got the game-winning.
All right, here's the game winner. Okay, so this is it's 45-45. The Jets have, you know, escaped fumbling the opening kickoff of overtime. They shouldn't have the ball, but they do.
It was a fumble.
It was definitely a fumble. So now Wesley Walker, who was brother had the Wesley Walker Jets jersey, number 85.
So Walker.
Mark Duper is 85 for the Dolphins. He had an enormous game. Mark Duper, Mark Clayton were incredible. And 85 for the Jets is Wesley Walker. He was there for a long time. He's already caught three touchdown passes in the game, including the last play of regulation to tie it. So here we go from about midfield. Here's Dick Enberg. Lay out, let the crowd talk. Show the pictures. This is TV Broadcasting 101. You punctuate, you let the crowd hit. And then when the moment comes back, then you do the denouement, if you will. But oh my, Dick Enberg, nobody like him, for sure. He was awesome.
615-737-1025. Perhaps we'll do this exercise again. A lot of great reaction.
We might have to do an old Titans game. That would try to spark a little more interest.
Yes, that would be a good idea. We can probably find
they're
time
just
to
not
do
as,
that.
I just thought the older nostalgia, pre-Titans, there's a bigger gap between what we see today and what we saw back then. I don't know that it would look as different if you did a game from the 1999 or 2000 season. Do we think?
I think it would look
more, a little.
It would be the beginning stages of what we know now. This was a much different product.
Much more primitive, if you will.
That's a good word for it. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the week. We'll take it to the bank. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025, 1063, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, David James, wrapping up the week with you. Stillman and Company coming up next. Jared is back. Jared does this weird thing where he takes off 4 days and works once. I don't get it. Just take the whole week off, dude. But he's coming back. We're happy to have Jared back. Quickly, before we get to take it to the bank, a programming note for all of you. So next week, DVD, instead of being on from our normally scheduled time of 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., we will be on from 9 a.m. to noon next week. Chase and Big Joe will be live at SEC Media Days in Atlanta. So Chase and Big Joe will be on next week from noon to 3. So we will be on from 9 to noon all next week. Chase and Big Joe live from SEC Media Days will be on from 12 to 3. Stillman and Company from 3 to 6. And, of course, Robbie and Rex Road from 6 to 9. By the way, 102.5 The Game's SEC Media Day coverage is sponsored by Brewhouse South. Experience Nashville's ultimate sports and brew hangout at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Vanderbilt, the Vanderbilt contingent, speaks on Monday. Clark Lee, Diego Pavia, defensive back Martell Height, and safety slash off, outside linebacker Randon Fontanette. And I imagine that at least one, if not multiple, of those players slash coach will be on our programs on Monday. So we will get back to you with that. So again, DVD on next week from 9 to noon instead of 11 to 2. Chase and Big Joe live from SEC Media Days from noon to 3. All right, let's take it to the bank, presented by our friends at F&M Bank, customer community, F&M Bank, banking made easy on purpose. I'll start. We do have the final of Wimbledon. Sinner versus Alcaraz, 1-2. Alcaraz has opened as a -150 favorite over Sinner for the men's Wimbledon final, according to ESPN Bet. They just had an epic final at the French Open 4 weeks ago. Alcaraz won that game, won that match after fending off a trio of match points. Alcaraz is 5-0 so far in Grand Slam title matches. I say he makes it 6-0. Alcaraz over Sinner at Wimbledon this weekend.
First of all, a couple of observations when you watch these guys play. If you don't watch a lot of tennis, Sinner somehow is Italian. That's like the least Italian name that you can have.
Yes,
and he doesn't look Italian. Like I was like, is he from Denmark or Sweden? Like, where's he from? Oh, he's from Italy. Mm-hmm. He's tall. He just disposed in straight sets of Djokovic, which that's not easy to do. So he is on a roll. I'm going to take Sinner in this game. And if you go back a ways on the station, Carlos Alcaraz is like the Spanish version of Ryan Porth, like a distant cousin, our former program director. He's got like a, he looks like he could be a Porth cousin. And I don't think there's any Spanish roots in the Porth family.
No, it's not, at least that we know of.
He's a heck of a player, though.
Yeah, so
this will be a really good match, I think.
I'm taking Sinner to win.
Okay. David James?
I'll take Alcaraz.
Okay. Any thoughts, Willie, on the home run derby this weekend?
The home run derby is getting a little bit like the slam dunk contest. Mm-hmm. It's past its heyday, and it's harder and harder each year to get the top home run hitters to actually play. Remember, there was a time the greatest slam dunk contests, and it's not even close, were the first few years. Like, maybe not the first one, because the first one people didn't really know what was going on. But then after a couple years, and this again, we're going harkening back to the mid-80s, when you had, in the same dunk contest, mm-hmm. Dr. J,
yes,
the
I
old school,
that.
Jordan, Dominique Wilkins, like the best dunkers were in the dunk contest. And then after a while, it's like, who are these guys in the dunk contest?
Well, actually, no, 2016 dunk contest was pretty good with Zach LaVine and Aaron Gordon going back and forth. That was actually a really good one.
Sure, I'm sure it was good.
For us,
we're talking
people.
About the great players and great dunkers.
Yeah.
That's
all
fair.
Doing it like Hall of Fame guys. The home run derby, so this year, like Pete Alonso's not doing it, and that got a lot of talk in New York because he doesn't want to mess up his swing. He's won it before. He got into a big slump after last year. He didn't do as well. Ronald Acuna is in it from the Braves. Cal Raleigh, who is leading the major leagues in homers, is doing. He's a catcher. It's pretty amazing what he's doing right now. He's got 36 home runs already on the season. Good. James Wood is a young player who is
with the Nationals.
With the Nationals, mm-hmm. who's got a chance to be really good. Byron Buxton, another guy that when you think home run, you really don't think of him. Like, he's a very good player, but not a huge home run hitter. O'Neill Cruz, who's an athletic freak, and he can hit it a mile, but again, not a huge headliner. Junior Caminero, one of 25 players on the Rays that you don't know, but they're a good team. Brent Rooker, who is from Memphis, Tennessee, woo-hoo. Played at Mississippi State. Yep. He's a good player. Again, but playing for the A's, you're kind of in obscurity. The Sacramento A's. And then Jazz Chisholm for the Yankees. Yep. And only because he's on the Yankees do you really know who he is. So those are the guys. It's not a sexy field at all.
It's a bunch of Mac McClungs is what you're telling me.
Sort of, yeah.
Pretty much
yeah.
so.
So all that being said, I think I'm going to go with I think Acuña. He's fresh, and he's always had that super effortless home run swing. He doesn't have to swing that hard to hit it out. I will take Ronald Acuña to win it.
SEC Media Days coming up again on Monday. Chase and Big Joe will be there live throughout the week in Atlanta. Looking forward to that coverage. What are we expecting? I'm sure there's going to be a ton of conversation about the college football playoff format. Oh. Outside of that, what do you think the biggest storylines of SEC Media Days are going to
be? I think it still has to be NIL.
The evolution.
And evolution of it and roster sizes. But here's and maybe, you know, here's something that the show can do, because obviously I will be on vacation for a few days here.
Yes. It'll be me and Willie with you from 9 to noon next week.
But here's something. Who will take up the most air in the room during their press conference before questions are able to be asked of them? Because you remember, Nick Saban, he would take up so much time, you know, just giving his spiel, and then, you know, you get your questions after that. But who's going to go the most?
I've offended Jacob.
The longest.
I've offended Jacob from Murfreesboro. He says, did you just compare Ronald Acuña to Matt McClung? What an insult. Not the direct comparison. I'm just saying that the people you want to see in the dunk contest aren't in the dunk contest
Acuña
anymore.
Might be the biggest name that's
yes,
in there.
Certainly. Who's going to take up the most oxygen?
Yes.
I don't know. Does Lane Kiffin like to riff?
Yeah, Lane Riffin. He likes
Riffin
to talk.
Kiffin.
I think it's going to be Kirby. I think Kirby's going to take up the most oxygen.
I do wonder about Kiffin in the, will he piggyback or any of the coaches try to get momentum going? Because Lane Kiffin, a couple years ago, after the first year of NIL, he brought up the term salary cap.
Yeah.
He brought up salary cap because he knew at Ole Miss, as it was unfolding in real time, he was like, well, we have a certain amount of money, but we don't have what other schools in our league have. We need a salary cap. That's what Deion Sanders was saying. And we're a long way from a real salary cap. But I wonder if they'll be able to define better what this new revenue sharing thing does. That will be Greg Sankey's opening thing that I'm sure he'll try to spell out. I don't know how well he'll do it. He seems to talk for a long time. He brings out quotes and sayings from books and movies and things as he's talking about it. So it's always top of mind. What's the system? How is it evolving? What do we want? Like, do we want a hard salary cap in college football, or do we kind of like that there's the Davids and Goliaths?
It is the unofficial start of college football season. I remember when it was here a few years ago, I pitched in on coverage with Teresa Walker of the Associated Press. It was an interesting experience, the one time I've covered SEC Media Days. It is talking season after all. And Chase and Big Joe will be there live all week. Chase will be back from vacation. Again, Chase and Big Joe live from SEC Media Days in Atlanta all next week from 12 to 3. Willie and I will be on with you from 9 to noon next week. So an earlier start for DVD, which will still be DVD without Derek because we have David. So it'll be Donick, Fingit, and David. That's the beauty of our program.
All the letters represented.
All the letters will be represented. Yes, represented. Yes, whatever. I'm going to stop talking. It's the weekend. I don't know why I added an extra syllable in there. But we hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Catch me Friday Night SmackDown tonight, Bridgestone Arena. Connor Newt, he's my date. Say hello. Stillman & Company with Jared Stillman, back from vacation for one day for some reason. We love you, Jared. Coming up next.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful weekend. See you next week. Peace.